Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Change Agent's Dilemma for Tuesday, March 18th, 2014. I'm your host, Heather Stagel, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, as I do once a month on Blog Talk Radio. This show is one of the many ways I help equip individuals and teams to influence organizational change at Enclaria. Before I introduce my guest today, I'd like to let you know about a webinar that's coming up next Wednesday on March 26th called Gain Leadership Support. It's part of the Design and Influence Irresistible Change webinar series. And so if you struggle with leaders who don't do exactly what you need them to do to implement change, or in some cases they do things that you really wish they wouldn't, then I highly recommend this webinar series. We're going to talk about the roles and relationships, or this webinar next Wednesday, and we're talking about the roles and relationships of change. We'll talk about what does leadership support look like and what are some of the ways that you can, some of the things you can do to get that. So to learn more and to register, please visit enclaria.com/events. Now, the Change Agent's Dilemma is how to influence change without authority, and my goal with this show is to share ideas and stories to help you do just that. Today, my guest is Jason Little, who is here to discuss modernizing change management with agile and lean practices. Jason is an organizational change practitioner at Lean Intuit and Lean Dog, a management 3.0 facilitator, an international speaker, and author of Lean Change Management. Jason is passionate about bringing meaningful change into organizations, typically through the introduction of agile practices. In his spare time, he also delivers Lean Startup workshops with the Ivy School of Business and University of Waterloo. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So I'm curious about your background and how you sort of put these things together. And so how did you even get involved in change management?
I started my career as a software developer, and eventually I got involved in what is known as the Agile community, and that's in 2001 there was a manifesto created which basically was a set of values and principles for how organizations could build better software. And from there I got into what's referred to as Agile coaching, which is helping organizations adopt more modern practices for creating software. Throughout the years of trying to figure out how to get organizations to adopt these practices, I started to realize that Agile had very little to do with Agile, and it had much more to do with change. So the trigger for me was going to an experiential conference where it was heavily based on the Satir change model and Myers-Briggs and really understanding the dynamics of change. And that was the trigger that kind of sent me down the path to starting to learn more about change management in organizational development. And the real reason was there's an organization called Version 1 that does an annual survey about how companies are adopting these practices. And they cite two main reasons why it fails, and one of them is general resistance to change, and the other one is failure to change the organization's culture. So this whole Agile thing and how to get companies to use better software practices is all about change. So I started to dig more into that world, and then the book and my approach over the last few years has been to try and bring some of the practices from Agile and Lean into change management. Because the more I learned about change management, I learned, you know what, this community has probably known for a few decades what the Agile community is just starting to figure out with respect to why changes don't work out the way we thought. So I see there's a natural bridge there. So that's been my goal, is to try and bridge the two communities together.
That's great. That's interesting. You have a similar story to mine, starting in a technical background and then having that aha moment that, okay, the challenge isn't really about what we're trying to do here. It's about changing the organization. So I think that's fair to say about a lot of different backgrounds, a lot of different specialties, especially in the technical arena. So great. So how is lean change management different from change models that are out there now?
At the heart of it, it's really about what I like to call co-creation of change, and that is people are more likely to be motivated to support the change if they have some insight into how the change is created. So typically what I see is that the change agents who are the experts or the change management team or the consultants come in and they copy and paste the plan that they used in the last organization, and it's typically a very linear progression. So we do some type of assessment. We create a plan. We execute the plan. We close out the project. Woohoo! Change successful. And I've been involved in some of those projects where it's a year-long program, and oh my goodness, we spent exactly $1.2 million, and the status report was green, and the change was successful from a budget and financial standpoint, but nobody's really exhibiting any of the behaviors that usually happen when companies adopt these agile practices. So lean change management is about taking some of those ideas from the agile and lean world, which they're focused on cross-functional teams, involving the people who are affected by the change in the design of the change, using lighter weight planning tools and very short feedback loops. Kind of changes the approach from being solely plan driven to incorporating feedback. And I guess one example is ProSize ADCAR assessment is something that can be used within the lean change management model, but you don't necessarily have to follow ProSize defined steps for executing the project. There's different ways to execute that, but the value of doing the assessment, especially in medium and larger organizations, can be quite powerful. And that's something that the Agile community doesn't do, which they could use. And then vice versa is the change management community could use some of these lighter weight planning tools that I describe in the book and the concept, the ideas behind the values and principles in Agile to help facilitate change, knowing that it's not something you can plan for completely and control completely. Change kind of has a nasty way of unfolding the way it's going to unfold. And often I find it's not exactly according to the plan that was created at the start. So
there's always something that you don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the whole idea is it's called the Mojito Method, which is something that was created by Jürgen Apollo, who wrote a book called Management 3.0, and that is taking ideas and models from many different communities and then combining them into a new model is more effective than those individual ideas themselves. And that's because today's organizations are much more complex, and using like a linear, plan-driven approach is less likely to work.
Right, and I know people who use the Irresistible Change Guide, which is the methodology that I have available on my website, that I get the feedback that they use that in conjunction with other things. So even, I wouldn't even advocate just using that. There's always so many things you can learn from different methodologies or different communities to help improve and make it make sense for yourself, really. So I'm wondering if, just for people who may be listening who aren't really familiar with Agile and Lean, I wonder if you can give like the really high-level explanation of what those two things are and how they might be different.
Sure. So Agile specifically is based on four values and 12 principles. And one of those four values is responding to change over following a plan. And sometimes that gets interpreted as, oh, we don't have to plan, we're Agile, which is absolutely not true. All it means is shorten your feedback loops and respond to how your organization is receiving the change as opposed to just driving this plan. And one of the tactical practices in Agile is something that's called retrospectives, which is essentially a lessons learned in the traditional project management world, except you do that more frequently. And an organization I'm working with now is we're 3 months into a three-year transformation, and we're doing a monthly retrospective specifically about the strategy for moving towards agile software delivery practices. So we're taking the feedback from all the teams, of which there's 13 to 14 right now who are participating in a pilot program, and we're taking that feedback, and that is helping us feed our plan versus saying, you know, here's how you shall do these practices. We want to find out by using the agile retrospective technique how they're adjusting to the change, what's in their way from contributing to the strategy, and then how us as a change team can remove those blocks. And that's really the heart of what Agile is. It's get a team together that can execute on a project, have them reflect every 2 weeks, and have them adjust their plan within the context and constraints of an overall strategy.
Great. And then what's the lean side of it?
So the lean side is
separate lean from that.
There some of the practices in lean, such as using five whys and fishbone diagrams, and using A3 thinking. A3 is a problem solving, an approach to problem solving, where in the lean world you start by understanding your current state. You look at some countermeasures you can do. You look at what the root cause is for some of the problems that you're seeing, and you define a future state. And then you define what obstacles would be in the way that would prevent you from getting to that future state. And then you actively work on removing those impediments. So the A3 problem solving report is like a one-page problem solving plan. And the way that I like to use those types of things is I call them canvases. So you create a simple artifact that you put up on a wall somewhere, and you have people who are affected by the change review the change plan up on a wall in a room together versus having it on an intranet site or having it in a SharePoint or having it on a PowerPoint presentation. Is you define where you want to go, set the strategy, put all the risks, issues, and blockers that would prevent you from getting to the future state, and then get the relevant stakeholders and people affected by the change in front of this artifact, co-creating the change. It's really the big difference between this and more traditional methods.
That's great. So yeah, when I think of lean, because I have my background is industrial engineering, so lean is closely tied with that. I think of things like just in time and having Kaizen events and minimize waste as much as possible. So I'm wondering if there are elements of that in there too.
Yes. Yeah. The minimizing waste is things like, sometimes as a change agent, you just have a gut feel it's not the right time to do a change. If you're trying to implement a change as a result of a merger, or in my case, the introduction of Agile, changing something as simple as status reports for projects can be really hard in big organizations because that cuts across so many different departments. An example of waste would be trying to do that too soon when the organization isn't ready to absorb that large of a change. So you want to think in terms of lean, of thinking about what are some smaller changes that will get us towards our quarterly goal that will feed into what our annual goal is for this change. So it's taking that mantra of reducing waste, making your work visible, and applying that to organizational change. Because in manufacturing, it's a little more simple, right? It's a lot easier to identify variants in your process and use some of the other lean tools to do it. But in change, it's often quite different. I mean, if the water cooler conversations are a great example, did you hear we're going to implement this change? And I heard they don't need project managers anymore. I get a lot of that by bringing in agile software practices. Your change has started right there. It doesn't start when the start date on the Gantt chart says it does. As soon as people get wind that there's some change coming in, your change team is already behind. So the way you deal with that is by shortening feedback loops and trying to thin out some of the planning to kind of learn how to dance with the system is what it's called.
I like that. So you mentioned moving the slider away from being plan-driven to feedback-driven, and I know you already touched on this a little bit, describing Agile, but is there any more you want to share about that concept?
I would say the feedback that I've had from people in the change management and the organizational development world is when they hear move away from plan-driven to feedback-driven, they interpret that as being chaos, and that is just going to the people and asking them what they want to do. And it's absolutely not what it is. It is trying to listen to what the organizational system is telling you and base your plan on how that system is reacting to the changes that you want to introduce, which is kind of backwards because as subject matter experts, often, you know, we're brought in as change agents to create a plan and push it out. And there's plenty of documentation and literature that says, you know what, that doesn't work. So by being feedback-driven is you're considering multiple perspectives about the change. So me as a change agent and typically as a consultant, my observations are completely different from what staff would be, which would be different from the perception managers have and what executives have about the change. So feedback-driven means incorporate those multiple perspectives and derive your plan based on which type of changes are most likely to work in your organization. And that's based on what type of products you do, what industry you're in, what your organizational culture is like, what your performance reviews and HR policies are, because those can often get in the way of, at least in my world, of bringing agile practices in, because you may have one stakeholder who has a performance bonus to get his project out the door, and that's completely at odds with another stakeholder. And that has nothing to do with agile per se. That is, there's a fundamental organizational problem of alignment that needs to be dealt with. So we have to take all of these insights and all this feedback from multiple people in different areas and use that as input into the plan. So I was talking
sure,
with
right.
the... Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it even sounds like it's not just one person necessarily taking all these pieces and developing the plan, but as getting as many people as you can to actually create the plan together.
Right, right. And sometimes they perceive that as being waste. It's what we have to do. We have to go get this change done. But for me, that's kind of backwards thinking. If this change is important to your organization and you want to transform to a new state, then you need to take the time to understand your whole organizational system, not simply push a plan out because our governance processes say, you know, thou shalt have a plus minus 50 estimate and thou shalt have an end date and a start date and things like that. So it's you know, don't manage transformational change as projects. It just doesn't make any sense in the context of complex adaptive system theory. So you're always adjusting to feedback. You do have a guiding light. You do have a true north, but you know, you're not solely focused on just executing a plan. And that's hard for some people who you know, feel safety by the certainty that plans bring. So they often think, well, I can't just go ask people. I have to come up with this. So it's not an order.
Right, you have to be the subject matter expert. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and you should.
And I like to say that if you're doing change management in your office with the door closed, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, exactly, and I've seen that done
no way
many
that it can happen.
Times. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So a couple of episodes ago, I talked with Jen Fromm about the 70% failure rate statistic for change that's so prevalent today. So I was curious, what's your take on that, and how does lean change management address that idea or that myth, really?
Yeah, I love that episode. That was great. I listened to that one live. Jen is just fantastic. I love reading her blog and her stance on that 70% stat being bollocks. I thought,
yeah, she did a lot of research on that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because I started out looking at that number as well. So I looked at the reports from Cotter and McKinsey and Honorick and things like that said, you know, 70% of these initiatives fail. And actually, in the when I did the first edition of the book a couple of years ago, I used that as a selling tool. And then I realized, you know what, that stat doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's to put a binary success failure stat on something as complex as transformational change, you know, in theory it sounds good. Did we get all the outcomes we thought we would get? If yes, then it was successful. If not, then no. But it's a lot more complex than that. I've seen some organizations where they have their ROI at the start, they do the change, and they're like, oop, we didn't meet the ROI, so let's change it, and hey, we made it. It's just, for me, it's a meaningless stat. It's something that I think big consulting firms use to sell fear. So 70% of all changes fail, but our process works every time, so buy it. It just, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a little cynical for me to say, and that would put some people off, but I really take the stance of bringing meaningful change, which is something I learned from hearing Daryl Connor speak at the Toronto Change Conference last year. That's success to me. Success for me is improving the lives of the people affected by the change, not a binary success-fail because of a performance review process for the VP of the change management group. You know, the transformational change brings so much uncertainty that it's very difficult to predict at the start exactly what you're going to get at the end. And it also implies that there's a logical start and end date to transformational change, which there isn't. It's going to evolve organically whether you like it or not. Instead of focusing on that stat, is focus on, you know, and this is where a lot of the agile and lean thinking comes from, is focus on being 1% better this month. And then that will, you'll get hockey stick improvement growth, which is, you know, the chart goes along and increases a little bit, and by the end, those 1% improvements add up substantially over time. So think long game, not short term.
Do you have any measures that you would recommend? You know, is there anything as far as lean or agile goes that from those communities, are there measures that you would recommend?
Oh, for sure. This is some of what is in lean change management is also based on lean startup. And one of the principles in lean startup is validate your assumptions before you go too far down the path of spending all your money building a product nobody wants. In the change world, that is, for me, it's okay, we want to implement Agile because we want to be faster, better, cheaper. How do we know we've been successful? Well, one metric that, you know, I could game that with, okay, our release cycles on average were 6 months, and we want to reduce that to 3 months. That's very easy to attain. You'll just chop your scope in half. Done. And it's a meaningless stat. What's more important is using something like Net Promoter Score. So are the business stakeholders more satisfied now with what IT is delivering compared to before? So how likely would you recommend your IT department as a delivery shop? Baseline that at the start, do your changes, and then do another measurement at the end. That's something that, you know, IT can't game. Like IT could come up with a whole bunch of metrics to say, you know, we've reduced our defects by 100% because now we don't label them defects anymore. We call them new features. You know, that's one of the benefits typically that comes from agile transformation, but that's another meaningless stat. There's things like using delivering happiness or happiness index with teams. I worked with one organization where we talked to the executives and said, what outcomes do you want to get from this, and how detailed do you want them to be? Are you fine with just asking people, does it feel better to work this way? Or do you want some more, you know, do you want some hard, tangible numbers? And in their case, they said, yeah, if people are less stressed out as measured by they're happier, awesome. That works for us. That's what we want to accomplish. So you need kind of a mix of both metrics. And I really like the Net Promoter Score because even for the change team, trying to implement with an organization here is, how well supported do you feel by the change team on a scale of 1 to 10? And then that's feedback that we're getting to say, you know what, I don't feel supported at all, which means us as a change team, we need to change something about how we're facilitating this change. So it's always thinking about measurements that you can't game, because every measurement can be gamed to a certain extent. So they have to evolve over time as well. Pick a set to help you learn, and then evolve them when they're no longer useful.
Great. Yeah, I like those. It's interesting that you're advocating against the more objective, concrete type measures in favor of more subjective measures, because usually you think the trend would be the opposite way, but you're saying it's easier to game the ones that are more concrete, where you're measuring the process versus asking people what they think. They're going to tell you.
Pick a little of both, too, right? I mean, when in my world, when people want to bring Agile in, it's because they want to release software sooner. So we do have some of those hard metrics, but like I said, that's very easy to game by cutting your scope in half. But by putting that metric in, that gets people to think differently. Okay, if we want to release in 3 months versus every 6 months, the only logical thing to do is to take scope out. So we hit the quote-unquote metric, but it's not so much a metric as it is a constraint to get people to behave differently, to come together sooner, to release software faster. So you get the benefit, but it's not just the success failure of that getting from 6 months to 3 months. And then you'll always want the some more qualitative, subjective ones too. So there should be business outcomes, but there should be a counterbalance of do you feel the executives are supporting this change on a scale of 1 to 10? Would they be open to getting that feedback? And make it anonymous so it's safe for people as well. Because I do, in the change management world and the Agile world, a lot of the reasons why people cite that change fails is because it's not supported by the executives. They come in and they say, go make that change and come back to me when it's done. Well, if you're serious about it, then you will let your staff measure you on how well you're supporting it. And if you don't want to do that, for me as a change practitioner, it shows you're not serious about this change. You're not invested in it. And that's a very difficult thing to do. So I guess the moral of the story is try and figure out how your measurements will be gamed, and then try and figure out some qualitative and quantitative ones that will help you make progress.
Yeah, keep it balanced. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, where can listeners go for more information or resources on lean change management?
I've got a blog up at leanchange.org, and there is a free the sample chapter that's available now. And the new edition of the book is scheduled to be released in mid-May. But that site has links to some other interviews and some videos and some other resources to learn more about it.
Great. And people can get a free chapter as well, right?
Yep. Which tells the story of how I got into a deeper story of how I got into change management.
Great. Well, Jason, thanks so much for being on the show. I've enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And coming up next month on April 24th, Supriya Desai will join the show and actually return to the show to talk about managing change in today's dynamic global economy. Thank you for listening to The Change Agent's Dilemma. If you'd like to find more resources to help you influence change in your organization, including individual coaching, team workshops, and upcoming training events, including the webinar next week, please visit inclaria.com. While you're there, I invite you to sign up for my monthly newsletter. Not only will you receive helpful tips, but when you subscribe, you also receive a free chapter from my change management toolkit, The Irresistible Change Guide. Until next time, take care and best wishes for your change initiative.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
Happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty!
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
Happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty!